More trouble in Hong Kong, the Asia Cup under-19s, sand deep in the CPL, as well as more positive news out of Nepal. All that and more around the world and on 91.3 Sport FM. Welcome to the Emerging Cricket Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Emerging Cricket Podcast, where we dissect the news and events from cricket's new world. Here again at your favourite listening spot and at the home of sport in Perth 91.3 FM. Once again, thank you to Red Gazelle for bringing us into another show. If you're a part of our Patreon movement, you may have also noticed another song from them, Damascus, bringing us in and taking us out of that show as well. I'm your host, Daniel Beswick, and I'm joined by the two regulars today. Fellow co-hosts, of course, first, Tim Cutler. Tim, how are you?
Well, it's all happening up here in Brisbane. We have electrical storms all around us. The cricket season here about to start, it appears, to touch on full member cricket for at least 3.5 microseconds. That there are going to be quite a few spots up for grabs over the coming Sheffield Shield season. So how are you? Are you happy now? Ashes is over. You're not sitting up all hours of the night.
Yeah, well, luckily never coding, but yeah, a lot of ball-by-ball stats and other information to do with, of course, a lot of cricket going on in the UK. But with the Ashes finishing, I think I'm officially now back on day shifts, which I am overjoyed about. Yeah, plenty of spots up for grabs through the Sheffield Shield for some budding Australian batsmen, both opening batsmen. Spots up for grabs. Should be interesting viewing over the next couple of weeks, but some one-day cricket first to get through with the Marsh Cup around the corner. Someone who is rather fond of one-day domestic cricket action, as I've seen via his Twitter account, better known by many as Copernicus Cricket. Nick Skinner. Nick, how are you?
I'm very well, yes. I remember growing up watching the Mercantile Mutual Cup, and that was the highlight of the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah. Hitting the sign, winning the money. Bring the signs back, I'd say. And the catches in
Shane
the crowd.
Shane Lee, smacking it. Great stuff.
I think Steve Waugh has one as well.
Yeah, that big slog sweep, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great, great times. Hopefully Fox Cricket can deliver some fantastic domestic cricket coming up into the Australian summer.
Nice little plug for your employer there.
That's it. Let us know where you're enjoying the podcast with the hashtag ECPod. And Tim, I'll probably start with you. You've been really busy with our emerging cricket work here over the last week with a number of developing stories coming out of Hong Kong. We'll start with Anshuman Rath. Anshuman Rath has quit Hong Kong to pursue an Indian dream with the intention of entering the IPL draft as a local and looking to crack the national team there. And this week also, we've also had a mini revolt in the Hong Kong squad in the lead-up to the T20 World Cup qualifier in UAE, which is only a few weeks away. Tim, so much to get chatting about with you, and obviously I want to bring you in nice and early. Quite a lot going on.
Well, where do we start here? You've mentioned Anchi, and you've mentioned other goings-on, but I guess we can take a step back first to sort of frame the situation in that Hong Kong's coach, or at least the coach, has been for the last 3 years, Simon Cook, leaving his post, well, officially left, but has stayed on to help the handover. But Simon Cook, ex Middlesex and Kent County player, over 160 games, ended up as a players rep at Kent CCC, moved to Hong Kong in late 2013, about the same time I got there, actually, and he was head coach of Hong Kong Cricket Club first when I also arrived. But in time, when I took the role at Hong Kong Cricket Association, of course, we became Cricket Hong Kong. We were able to secure his services full-time as head coach. He'd started as a bowling consultant under Charlie Burke, but when Charlie went up to be director of cricket, we got Simon over. So he's departed, and Trent Johnston, you know, a famous name in the associate cricket world, former Irish captain, taking them through to the next round in 2007. When he finished up playing, he did some coaching with the Ireland women's team, moved back to Australia and coached his home state, New South Wales. So somewhat of a coup. I think he was to coach a grade club in Australia. So it would look like he was still on the lookout, but it was a great pickup. But he's arrived to, well, chaos, I would say, is the best way to describe it in Hong Kong. Not so much from the public unrest, as it most people would associate with Hong Kong at the moment. You know, put that to one side for now. Chaos in Hong Kong cricket. Anshuman Rath, as we saw earlier this week, well, actually last week, announced that he has switched allegiances to India. You know, we've spoken on the podcast previously about his future, or at least him considering his options and being very much a three-format player. He was in the frame to get a contract with Middlesex a number of years ago, but because he was from an associate nation, he wasn't able to secure the sportsman's or sportsperson's visa required. It was only open to players from four member nations. So in the last year or so, he's been playing in New Zealand, and I don't think that's exactly gone the way he had hoped. So again, he took a view and looked out there to see the options available to him. Of course, he was born in Hong Kong in the late 90s, but his father's actually a marine insurance broker, so close to my heart, that being my professional background, moved to the city in the early 90s. So when he was born post-handover, he has held Indian citizenship and travels on Indian passport, as he has his entire life, holding just the single passport there. So that, on paper anyway, makes him available for selection for India and within domestic circuit there. Now, there is a one-year qualification period for him to be able to do that. But basically, he has signed on with one of the states to come and play club cricket there, with a view to him hopefully playing Ranji Trophy and looking forward to hopefully playing Test cricket for India. And I think that, you know, you say it quickly, it does sound like quite a stretch, but I think the talent that the world has seen, you know, the majority of the world will have seen his innings against India, which showed everyone else what we already knew, that he's one of the most talented kids out there at only 21. But he can actually go into the IPL draft as a local uncapped player, which, you know, is a little bit of a, not a slap in the face, but you sort of think of how many internationals he's had for Hong Kong in the past and his great record. But he'll go in there because he's been uncapped, or not capped, I should say, for India. He'll go into that section there. So, well, I guess a lot of emerging cricket fans will take an even bigger interest in the IPL draft for 2020. Don't forget, he played under the tutelage of Stephen Fleming in the Canada, the Global T20 Canada, the Edmonton Royals, and Fleming's been connected to the Chennai Super Kings, amongst others. So you never know where he could end up. With a few openers moving around, there might be a spot at the Sunrisers. I think my worlds would definitely be colliding there, watching Anshuman Rath opening the batting with David Warner. Wouldn't that be a sight? But who knows what will happen there. I can only wish him the best. You know, I'd love for him to be playing for Hong Kong and pulling them up through the leagues to potentially knock you on the door one day to be thinking about full membership and test status. But, you know, I think he's had a look at as he said in our interview, to look at his options out there and be realistic about his chances to be a professional cricketer. And unfortunately, he's had to look elsewhere. So that's a huge loss, not only for Hong Kong, but for the emerging game. Yeah, if that wasn't enough to lose your captain and your best player, and if too bad if Anshi hadn't have got the Ian Baker Finches with the ball, that's a bit of a late 80s, so I think it's 1990, I think it was, when he won the British Open, won it, and then missed all these cuts afterwards because basically he couldn't hit a golf ball anymore. But Anshi definitely got that with his bowling. But to lose that player is big enough. Going to an event as important as the T20 World Cup is for Hong Kong. But it came to light late last week from various sources there who were keen to see Hong Kong do well, that after the squad was announced, Azaz Khan was named captain after Anshi was no longer available. Kinshit Shah, who performed so well in Namibia, one of the few who performed well in Namibia for Hong Kong, was VC. Former captain Tanvir Afzal, after having a pretty ordinary campaign in Namibia. I think he only took two wickets across, I'm trying to think, it was around 40 overs that he averaged over 100 with the ball and over four runs and over. I'm sure they'll work out some way. But basically, you know, having sat there and watched him bowl every ball, Hong Kong's every ball, you know, he really did look a bit of, not quite his old self, and lost a bit of his pace. And he never was a quick bowler, but he was always really accurate. And, you know, we saw that in 2014, you know, a little in fits and bursts there in the T20 World Cup when he took two Bangladeshi wickets in the first over in that huge match when Hong Kong shocked the home team in Chittagong. You know, eventually when Hong Kong won the game, and you look back now, the two batters that were out there being Haseeb Amjad and Nadeem Ahmed have now been banned. So I guess it's one of those, it's bittersweet looking back. But if Hong Kong had chased down Bangladesh's small total in under 15 overs, Nepal would have actually gone through from that group to the Super 10s, as it were, back then. They ended up getting all the way, I think, to the last over, or at least the second last over. So that meant that the Black Hawks didn't have to come in to pick them up, because the army had scrambled them waiting. I thought, well, if you Hong Kongers beat Bangladesh by too much here and they don't go through, then there's going to be a riot. But anyway, the point of that is that Tanvir, after being out of form and not being the player that he once was left out of the squad. And rather than taking this lying down, he's gone to three of his confidants, should we say, who were selected in the 15, being former skipper Bubba Hyatt, who had recently returned from Global T20 in Canada, alongside Ehsan Nawaz, who was also there, and Ehsan's brother Tanvir Ahmed, both of them quick bowlers. And, well, who knows what happened in these conversations, but what basically happened then was Bubba, Ehsan and Tanvir went to the new coach, Trent Johnston. Remember, not long after being told that your captain, your best player, won't be there. And they said, well, we aren't too happy with the selections that you've made here, and we would humbly request, you know, see demand that Tanvir be, well, his position in the squad be reinstated, or we will all make ourselves unavailable and we won't play. And if you just hold that thought for a moment, back in 2011, Charlie Burke had, well, a good friend of the podcast, Charlie Burke, had recently moved to Hong Kong to be head coach. He was an ICC regional development manager before that, and went to Hong Kong to lead them in the World Cricket League Division 3. He got there, I think, late 2010, looking into 2011. He actually let out here. He dropped a couple of senior players who tried to pull a similar stunt and basically made representations again and said, look, if you don't select this player X or Y, then we're all not going to play. And he, the same as what Trent Johnston and Cricket Hong Kong behind him now have said, I guess it's like a movie line, like, we don't negotiate with terrorists. And not so much called their bluff, but said, well, fine. So there was a very terse meeting on Monday evening with all the players concerned, and Trent, and I believe the CEO was there as well. And the long and short of it is that the four players, including Tanvir, although he wasn't in the squad, all said, well, if this doesn't change, then they're going to make themselves unavailable. And said, okay, well, all three of you aren't going to be considered for selection, and will be, the three of you in the squad will be removed, and the three of you that are on a contract, you'll also be released from that henceforth. So Tanvir, Avsal, Tanvir Ahmed and Ehsan Nawaz are not selected, and the two brothers are out of the squad, and all three contracts are cancelled. And Bubba Hyatt, you know, who up until the recent Scotland versus Netherlands game held the record for the fastest associate T20 international century, who isn't on a CHK contract at the moment, similar to an Ali Khan and Hayden Walsh Jr., not having USA cricket contracts allowing them to play in the CPL rather than being in Florida on national duties. Well, Bubba has been removed from the squad as well. And what it looks like now is there's potentially four of Hong Kong players, two of which I'd say the two brothers aren't really that often in the same squad, but say Bubba and one other from Hong Kong's best squad are never going to play for Hong Kong again, or at least there's going to be a very long road back. You know, anyone that has heard any of Trent Johnson's interviews or know anyone that have played with him or under him is it's a very high standard when it comes to integrity level demanded. You know, it's high standards demanded and given. And for this start, you know, I can't see them, well, geez, unless they really turn around and not only apologize but then make amends through hard work, I can't see these four players playing for Hong Kong ever again. It's just really such a disappointing situation. You know, for everything that Hong Kong cricket has gone through in the last, if we go back to March 2018, there we go, we'll go there. They've come through on a bit of a high, coming third in the World Cricket League Championship. Disappointed that they didn't get that one win against Netherlands that would have got them that top position and a spot in the ODI Super League where Netherlands are now. You know, millions of dollars in funding, full member matches that they'd be able to sell their own media rights to. That's disappointing, but at least, you know, finish third, direct spot into the World Cup qualifier. You know what? We might even snag a Super 6 spot here. You know, we're probably not going to make the World Cup. You know, it's only two teams out of this qualifier, and we've got sides like Scotland, Zimbabwe, Afghanistan, and whatnot. Slow start there, they lose to Scotland, and then they come back and beat Afghanistan, a full member, the first time that Hong Kong has ever beaten a full member in a one-day international. You know, that game against Bangladesh was the first time that Hong Kong had ever beaten a full member in any international, but this was the first time in 50-over cricket. And then they don't win another game. You know, Anchi strong again, but no one else in the order was able to put together the scores necessary. Bombed out, lost in the crossover playoffs against the Netherlands, against Nepal. And Nepal, you know, didn't have a great tournament either, but won the games that mattered and got themselves an ODI status and a spot in the Cricket World Cup League 2, of course, the seven-team league of ODI Associate Nations, which sits below that 13-team Super League. So they head to Namibia for World Cricket League Division 2, highly fancied by most to go through. Everybody was tipping Namibia not to go through, and maybe PNG or Canada or maybe even Oman. They start well, they beat Canada, Anchi scores 100, everything's looking rosy, and then again, similar to after the good win against Afghanistan in Zimbabwe, in Namibia or in Africa again, they don't win another game, and it was just really poor performance. Yeah, Anchi was top run scorer in a terrible campaign. Kinshit Shah was a shining light with his all-round skills, opening the bowling with his off-spin and batting in the higher order. And from there, we thought, well, here's something you can build a team around. But everybody else, you know, Zakat Khan wasn't there due to the ill health of his father. And unfortunately, he's since passed away. But there it was, Hong Kong from ODI status, almost making a World Cup in 2014 for 2015, and now down ranked into the 20s. And then you have the Hong Kong Sixers being cancelled. And then all of this happens. And it's just an absolute, well, it's calamitous, really, and really, really selfish by these players. It's one thing being dropped, taking your licks, going back and training hard and coming back. But to bring other people into this, and two of them quite young, I think they're still in their late teens or maybe very early 20s, to take advantage of the influence you have in the social circles. And again, I can't speak for what was said and how it was negotiated about how they would go about it. But to have four people basically putting themselves, well, putting one person initially, but putting themselves before the team, it just goes against, again, what cricket is about. We talk about it being such an amazing sport because it is a team sport played by 11 individuals on each side. But when it comes down to it, if that team doesn't perform well together, then there's no point trying. And, you know, they've fallen at the first post here. Like, we haven't even got to talking about the social unrest in Hong Kong. You're thinking, was what we were going to talk about, and that's the issue. Yes, it sounds like the ICC is reviewing the security status of Hong Kong being able to host the Challenge League B round one in November, December. You know, the Hong Kong Tennis Open, the ladies the WTA event has been cancelled. It's been postponed indefinitely, and that's a huge government-funded event alongside the Hong Kong Open and the Golf, and things like the Dragon Boat are all hugely government-funded. Unfortunately, cricket isn't. You know, the last largely government-funded event was the 2011 Sixes, when there was the All-Stars team, etc. But the fact that these government events are being cancelled just shows the sort of state that Hong Kong is in terms of the social unrest. And it really just goes to the heart of how disappointing the situation is. Is like,
wow. Yeah, lots going on there, Tim.
Hello and welcome to the Tim Cutler podcast here at Emerging Cricket.
Just get him talking about Hong Kong and he'll never stop. The first sort of comparison that I think of is the Kevin Peterson situation, where you have an excellent individual player, but you know the team didn't really get along with him and caused a lot of issues. So it seems like, you know, you've got Tanvir and Baba Hayat, who's obviously, well, in the absence of Anshuman Rath, probably their best batsman, and the brothers, yeah, I mean. One thing to be said for them, I guess, is that they're loyal. They're, you know, his mates are sticking by him. But yeah, it's very poor. And I know we do see this sort of thing in associate cricket. Even thinking back to the 2011 World Cup, where John Davison, of course, was rumoured to have been threatening similar action over the non-selection of Barnett and Ian Billcliffe, who I assume are a couple of his mates, and he wasn't happy that they were left out. Of course, that he, you know, ended up playing and they didn't, so it all worked out. But yeah, I think especially in associate cricket, you know, when the talent pool is a lot shorter, you do need to really play for the team. And you mentioned Wackaz there, and I'm just wondering if our Perth listeners of a certain generation might remember Bob Simpson coming back out of retirement to lead a struggling Australian side. So I don't know if that's going to be the Wackaz role, and he's going to come back and maybe try and lead Hong Kong to something special. But yeah, it does reflect poorly on team culture, very poorly on team culture, in fact. Looking at this sort of shenanigans, you might call it. You know, I was thinking back to talking to Anshi in Namibia about, you know, just the team and where they're going, and he did express certain frustrations about let's just say a relaxed attitude. You know, maybe they weren't taking it as seriously as they perhaps should be, considering the, you know, the amount of funding on the line and the various pathways they were trying to qualify for. And, you know, as the captain, he was trying to rally them, and you know, he was basically the only one really performing. You did mention Kinshit Shah as well, who had a pretty good tournament. You do wonder how much of this Anshi sort of saw coming, and as you said, Tim, I wish him all the best in his endeavours in India. And, you know, getting picked for the IPL obviously would be huge, but just as important, I think, is if he does play Ranji cricket, is that his the ability for him to develop as a red ball player, because he's a special talent. And I remember, I know we talk a lot about Namibia, but seeing him play against Canada, I came across the ground to, I saw the back end of his century, and, you know, as a Canadian fan, I was not very happy about the result, but just watching Anshi play, it was just a masterclass, and he's an absolutely brilliant batsman, so I don't doubt that he will be able to crack it domestically, at least in India. And, you know, we've seen the Indian batting lineup, it does rotate quite a lot, so I think there will be some vacancies over the next few years. So I think Anshi's, I wouldn't be surprised to see him play Test cricket for India. I know that probably sounds like a big call, but I think he's got the talent to put together a run of form, and yeah, who knows what could happen. So all the best to him. But yeah, gee, Hong Kong are looking very threadbare ahead of this qualifiers, and I think, yeah, they're going to struggle. Just going back to the team culture, though, I remember seeing when Ryan Campbell announced the squad for the Netherlands team to the upcoming qualifiers for the T20 World Cup. There was, you know, some, as there always is with these selections, you know, some rumblings over players who were left out and, you know, who got in and whatnot. But Bas de Leder, who was one of the guys left out, took to Twitter and basically just said, well, this is professional sport and the guys who weren't selected weren't good enough and need to go back and work on their game and get better and, you know, get selected next time. And I wonder, you know, do the Hong Kong players, do they have that sort of mentality, you know, where if they're not selected, all right, I'll go back and pile on the runs or take a bunch of wickets and then they'll have to select me next time? Or do they have a sort of a sense of entitlement maybe of, you know, oh, I've played for the team for 5 years or 10 years or whatever and I deserve to be picked no matter what? And so I think if they're going to, yeah, lead a revolt basically over not being picked, it indicates that they're not putting the team first and that they perhaps think that they think they're bigger than the team maybe, I think it seems to be what's going on here.
Well, you two have discussed especially the team culture and the Tanvil Afsal story at length, so I don't want to talk about that too much, but I will say that in Namibia, you know, watching him in person, I think he took, what was it, 2 wickets in one game and then went none for 187 in the rest of the tournament. So, you know, purely from what we've seen, I think a decision to leave him out wasn't necessarily without grounds to do so. Another positive being that perhaps no one will really know much analytically about a few of these Hong Kong players, may cause a few surprises. That's me being extremely positive about it. And it's probably a chance to blood a little bit more talent in the Hong Kong system, some more international cricket. But yeah, as you guys say, it's not a great story. And yeah, well put there, Nick, with the Baz de Leyder comparison, because that's a culture that you do want to see. And Ryan Campbell's setup there seems to be a little bit more in control. I know it's obviously been difficult for Trent, given his short time in the role. I did want to talk a little bit more about Anchi, because I think a lot of people forget, purely by how articulate he is, he's only 21 years old, and he's obviously got time to develop, and he's good enough technically to flourish as a red ball player, and this will give him the opportunity to show that in the Indian system, in the Ranji system. And I do think he's legitimately a three-format player. Hoping that emerging fans get behind Anchi's mission and that they don't forget that he's come from the Hong Kong system. I think it's still a positive story for emerging cricket if he is to move high up in the Indian setup. And yeah, I think from an associate point of view, he's probably in the top three players as a batsman in associate cricket, if not being the very best. And as you said, Tim, working with Stephen Fleming at Edmonton will only help, I think, with Fleming being quite a prominent T20 coach and going around the world and coaching in those events. I think his positive performances in those tournaments in Canada will be beneficial. Tim, but yeah, it just doesn't look like a fantastic culture set up at Hong Kong, and that's been down to quite a few changes over the last couple of months. But as you said, you know, one person's not as big as a team or as a campaign like this T20 World Cup campaign, Tim.
I'm sure that's enough, and was a Billy Madison-esque. I just hope I haven't made everybody in the room dumber for listening. But about the God attitude and whether absolutely, you know, is it about the attitude and a sense of entitlement? I think Nick asked just before you sort of started rounding out before I jumped in. Look, the pool of talent is so shallow there. It is such a small pond. But I think the behaviour that has been exhibited here has shown that there's been a failing in attitude. And I guess the question will be, and from everything I hear, Trent Johnston was extremely firm with them during the meetings, and they will take the message back that he will be taking no crap whatsoever. And maybe that's what this squad needs. And I don't like the cliche of tough love, but I mean someone who's actually going to be on them and hold them to account and to see who comes through that. Because if Hong Kong are going to be a going concern in men's cricket and to have the funding that can reinvigorate it's a vibrant cricket community. I think everybody seeing some of the responses on Twitter, and I hate this, that, oh well, these aren't native players and that's what you get with these bought players. No, GGF. You know, Bubba Hyatt's father has been in Hong Kong for over 30 years, speaks better Cantonese than he does English. Bubba was born in Pakistan, but we had to go backwards and forwards to where he could be best looked after by his family, but has spent most of his life in Hong Kong. Tanvir Afsal, after representing Pakistan for the under-19s, has been in Hong Kong for 10 years. Ehsan and Tanvir Ahmed, are both in their late teens and have gone to high school in Hong Kong. You know, this is Hong Kong cricket. This is the cricketing community. Yes, there should be more growth amongst the majority Chinese population. But I think it was on Reddit that I replied to something similar that, you know, that issue with local engagement is a symptom of the challenges that Hong Kong cricket has. It is not the reason that this has happened. And anyone that aligns the ethnicity and background to this is borderline racist, if not bang on, in that it's not about where these players are from or the colour of their skin. This sits on the players and the decisions that they've made. And not only what they've done to their own careers, but how this could harm Hong Kong cricket.
Well said, Tim. You know, we see that criticism from people who aren't as informed on the situation regarding Hong Kong players quite a lot. And it is infuriating because, you know, here we have Tim here who's been involved in the Hong Kong system telling people, you know, just how involved and how much that the Hong Kong system does help and develops these players, either born there or coming to Hong Kong from a very young age. Let's move on, guys, because we have talked about that for quite a while and justifiably so, Tim, obviously being involved in Hong Kong cricket for as long as you were.
Well, I guess I did play six seasons there as well. Well, I'll tick that one off. It doesn't sound as bad there. But yeah, and absolutely, it hurts. And to see this things like this sort of breed apathy. It's already a city that struggles to maintain the gaze of home fans. And I can hear, you know, Rajan Shah on Twitter and Peter Della Penna similarly talking about cricket fans in those particular nations. You know, people in America seem to love watching cricket, but they don't like watching American cricket. And I think we're looking at the crowd at Lauderdale. Or lack thereof, probably tells you how much they like watching American cricket. And if you're trying to get people passionate about the game, and look, the Blitz was one of many good things that have happened in Hong Kong cricket in the last decade or so to get people passionate about it. Things like this just make people turn away. People are busy enough with their lives in Hong Kong and worrying about other things to go to an effort only to be disappointed by something like this. And if cricket just keeps disappointing people, there's enough to keep people busy.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, I mean, I love this sort of cultural intersection with sport because this for me is the beauty of sport and especially cricket and the way it brings communities together and cricket, especially in Hong Kong with their you know, multicultural sort of fusion culture of you know, British and Chinese and with the I guess the subcontinental migrants for the cricket scene as well. Just that sport and the way that it brings together people, I think in Hong Kong's I guess as we've seen, I don't want to get too political on this podcast because I mean, yeah, then I might talk for 15 minutes, but the struggles that Hong Kong is having and has had over defining their identity as a nation or as a I don't know what you'd call it,
as a people,
you know, well, yeah, as Hong Kong is, and that's a relatively new concept because, you know, the idea of being a Hong Konger is it's developed as they, you know, handover is fast approaching, you know, 2047 is not that far away. Someone Anchi's age is just going to be, you know, middle-aged when Hong Kong becomes, you know, fully integrated into the rest of China. And that's something that native Hong Kongers are grappling with. And, you know, what do they want their city to look like? And cricket, I think, has such potential to create an identity for them and, you know, fuse together that British history and the Chinese and the multicultural cosmopolitan world city that it is. And it's just such a shame that they're wasting that, really. They're just bickering over loyal but stupid is how I described Tanvir's mates in our group chat. And I think that pretty much, yeah, it's just stupid that they've done this and that they're having all this drama when they should be focused on building the sport and reaching out to Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is looking for identity and cricket is in a unique position to be able to offer them identity. And most places, I'd say, where cricket is played, you know, identity is relatively, you know, solidified, whereas in Hong Kong, it's in flux and it's just such a perfect opportunity. And yeah, as I said, it's just a waste. And it's a shame for Trent Johnston as well, just putting that out there. You know, he's really passionate guy, loves cricket, loves the game, and just to have to deal with this sort of nonsense as pretty much the first thing, you know, as he's barely got off the plane, really, yeah. And to have to deal with this is, yeah, it's not fair on him.
Looks like you have both covered that pretty much in complete depth, so I don't really think there's anything from me to add. So let's move on to the ACC Asia Cup Under-19s. And from an emerging perspective, probably not the best results. We did see Afghanistan qualify for the second semi-final, although both the semi-finals were abandoned, which meant that they actually missed out on going through. We saw Kuwait participate in the tournament, which is an achievement in itself. Obviously, the results not fantastic, but as I said, you know, their participation here is probably the most important thing. But with both semi-finals abandoned due to rain, it meant that India took on Bangladesh in the final, and India successfully defending 106, bowling out Bangladesh for a 101 in one of the more remarkable scorecards. Nick, I'll start with you. First of all, it's great to see Kuwait participating and to see Afghanistan continue to build at underage level. Just a shame that they didn't quite get the weather on their side and have their game called off.
Yeah, this is a pretty odd situation, really. It's the first time I've ever heard of this happening. Both the semi-finals were washed out without a ball bowled. So basically, India and Bangladesh progressed by virtue of having finished higher on the in the group stage, ahead of Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. But we saw Afghanistan almost upset India. Basically, if they had won their game against India, they would have progressed with the washout. They were bowled out for 124, but they got India 7 down before they got to the target. So they made a pretty good fist of defending it. And that's, I mean, that's been a recurring story of Afghan cricket, really, hasn't it? That they're bowling, they just have this amazing production line of quality spin bowlers, but they just, the batting has just struggled again and again. And you know, if they just had a few more runs on the board, they might have knocked off India there. The emergence of a couple more wrist spinners for them has been impressive as well. Shafiqullah Zafari with a right arm wrist spinner and Noor Ahmad, left arm wrist spinner, both took 8 wickets. And yeah, as I said, almost bowled Afghanistan to victory against India there. And you know, where do they get all these wrist spinners from? Is it the Rashid Khan effect already? I don't know.
Some results from Group B. Nepal and UAE unfortunately unable to get out of that group. It was a pretty tricky group with Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. A couple of key performers looking at Nepal. Rit Gautam may be trying to solve the Nepali opening batting woes. He made some runs at the top of the order. Pawan Sharaf, who of course has played at the senior level for Nepal as well, he had quite a good tournament, as well as Rohit Kumar Pudel, who also made runs. So quite a few familiar faces in that team. UAE, unfortunately, nothing really to write home about here. They did lose all three matches in the group stage, but it is a key development period for a lot of these young players moving into senior international cricket. So hopefully a lot of experience to take under their belt. One more thing that I did want to add before we do move on, guys, is that the ACC have made this tournament a yearly tournament, which means that a lot of these players get the chance to develop year upon year before they do move into senior cricket. That's quite a vital cog in their development, Nick, isn't it? Because you need competitive play, not just once at underage level, but throughout, you know, being, say, from the ages of 15 to 19, you get the chance to play in this tournament 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, and it's good from the Asian Cricket Council, the ACC, to see them putting some money into funding youth and especially associate youth development, because, you know, with the ICC trimming down quite a lot of their regional underage tournaments, there is a bit of a gap. And so, yeah, the ACC is by far and away the best regional development body in terms of various global organisations. But the fact that they are playing regular 50-over cricket, and you know, we saw this with the qualification pathway as well to the Under-19 Asia Cup, which had quite a few other teams, you know, Malaysia, etc. And yeah, as I said, it's a bit of a gap for them. And one of the issues with the ICC's fairly heavy focus on 2020 cricket is that you know, the new structure we've seen with the Cricket World Cup League 2 and the Challenger League, a good structure, I'm not knocking it, but beyond those 32 teams, there's really very little 50-over cricket at all. And the problem is that, of course, if your game isn't suited to the shortest format, you miss out on talent. And so, you know, someone like an Anshuman Rath, who he is a three format player, but his talent is going to be developed to the fullest extent in first class cricket, and there just isn't first class cricket, let alone 50 over cricket. So and it's just a shame that you would miss out on players whose game is not ideally suited to the shortest format, and those kinds of players are going to have a bit of an opportunity to shine. And so I applaud the ACC for running this tournament, and just thinking about someone even like a Steve Smith, who we've seen with a Bradman-esque Ashes series, he's certainly very good in white ball cricket, but he's not superhuman in the same way as he is in tests. And so just think, if someone like a Steve Smith never had the chance to play test cricket, there's a lot of chatter about cricket having too many formats and it's congesting the schedule, and there are certainly concerns around that. But I think part of the beauty of this game is that there are different formats and you can have different skill sets, and you play, it's the same sport, but it's subtly different, and it takes a different approach and a different skill to play each format. And on the one hand, that shows the absolute skill of multi-format players, but on the other hand, it's like having different genres of music. You can play or watch 2020 cricket and that's has its own charm, and you can play or watch test cricket and that has its own charm as well. So I think, yes, it's very good that the ACC is running this tournament, and I hope we can see more regional 50 over cricket, because it is a bit marginalised these days.
Another final point to add there with playing underage international cricket, and this is more of a Nepali example than some of the others, but because it is so vital for Nepali underage teams to play well, because once they do move into the senior game, and because there is a vacuum and a lack of domestic cricket in Nepal, it means that the really good players in that under-19s team just about jump straight into the senior squad. And it means that, you have to have your game just about up to speed almost straight away. So for someone like Nepal, and I'm sure that the other associate countries are in the same boat with this, because Indian players, Bangladeshi players, Pakistani players, Sri Lankan players will ultimately move into a first-class setup. The reality is, from an associate point of view, a lot of these players will just move on the conveyor belt to the senior side. So it makes it hugely vital for these guys to play underage cricket and to have a yardstick to see where they need to be to match India, to match Sri Lanka, to match Pakistan and Bangladesh. So again, full credit to the ACC, the Asian Cricket Council, for providing this platform for players like that. Let's stick with Nepal, because there are plenty of things going on there at the moment. Three talking points in this week's podcast. I'll start with the Nepal elections, and a huge shout out to Momo Cricket, Rajan Shah, for bringing us some news out of Nepal as we try to keep up with everything going on. Of course, the Cricket Association of Nepal, who are suspended, they've agreed, along with the Independent Panel and National Sports Council, to meet on September 27 and 28 for the elections of the Central Working Committee, and that's 15 days prior to the ICC general meetings. If everything goes well there is a chance that Nepal will be reinstated as an ICC member on October 13 and 14. That's after a meeting that will be held here in Sydney, so hoping to potentially keep my ear to the ground with that. Another quote from ICC Deputy Chairman Imran Khwaja, he says, and this is from Momo Cricket as well, "I'm glad to note that we are in the final stages of conducting the central elections. I'm optimistic that upon conclusion of central elections, the ICC will be in a position to consider Nepal's reinstatement at its October meeting in Sydney." So that's something to look forward to. Something else that has come out this week is that the Everest Premier League has signed a deal with D Sports to broadcast that competition, which of course will be held in late February to mid-March next year. Brilliant news. Before we do get into some other Nepali news, because we have seen Sandeep Lamachane perform in the Caribbean Premier League and also re-sign with the Melbourne Stars, good to see there's some progress on the Nepali front and the development of cricket in the hugely popular cricketing nation will hopefully continue, Tim.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably a Captain Obvious comment for anyone that listens to this podcast a lot. But yeah, this is great news for Nepali cricket to not have a governing body in place since 2015 has only exacerbated the issues with the domestic setup. basically everything that we see now, the likes of Sandeep and Paris and whatnot, have grown from little to no domestic setup. And look at what they were able to do. You know, we can go back and go result by result in the World Cup qualifier and World Cricket League Championship and say they were potentially a little bit lucky, but fortune does favour the brave sometimes, especially in associate cricket. And the way they got out of Division 2 in Namibia in 2018 just showed what they were made of. So just imagine with a fully functioning board, administration and a proper regional setup with domestic cricket, how great this could be for the game's development. Yeah, to think that if it wasn't for Pabudu going to Basant Ragmi's wedding in rural Nepal and the local area hastily organising a trial or a practice so Pabudu could see the young players play, and that was where he saw Sandeep. You know, if that hadn't have happened, who knows, we may not even have heard of Sandeep. You'd like to think that talent like that would rise to the top anyway. But it just gets you thinking as to how much talent is, well, unrealized talent is there, or talent that could be developed in a proper regional domestic setup. And you look at the next cabs off the rank when you look at the next full members or at least countries that are looking to be full members. And of course, everybody talks about Scotland, right at the top of the pile as the leading associate on and off the field, even with the Netherlands up in the ODI league. It is frequently spoken about that Scotland is there, maybe because of their yearning for long format cricket more than perhaps the Netherlands. But look, if Nepal was able to get their ducks in a row, there is no reason why not. And maybe we would see a similar situation as what happened with Ireland and Afghanistan. And you'd say perhaps Ireland had to wait for an Asian superpower or growing superpower to come in as well. And if we had that and both Scotland and Nepal were knocking on the door at the same time, we may see our 13th and 14th four members right in front of us. But yeah, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. There's still a lot of issues to be dealt with in Nepalese cricket, from politicking and infighting and, like we said, sort of a lack of a domestic structure. But if they can get that right, that this would just be amazing for the game overall, really.
Yeah, you mentioned how important administration is, and it's one of those topics that, you know, eyes sort of glaze over. Well, not ours, because we are nerds, but for most fans, administration is not the most interesting topic. But, you know, you certainly feel it when you either don't have one or when you have a bad one. And Nepal cricket has, well, had they've had both no administration and bad administration at various points along the last little while. So hopefully they're turning a corner here and they can sort themselves out. And this is the thing, you know, you talk about the amount of talent there, and just imagine if they actually have the proper structures in place to harness that talent. I think they'll be able to really start putting some results together. And we saw them crash out of the regional qualifiers partly because of administrative problems and just the fact that they don't have any consistent domestic cricket. And so being able to organize that will be a huge boost just to start with. And just on Sandeep, noticing him playing well in the CPL after being tonked around by the Qataris and the Singaporean batsmen, I think it just goes to show how much homework the associate cricketers put in to dealing with Sandeep. The fact that he's able to keep taking wickets in full member competitions, and yet he's struggled of late in the associate game.
Well, we'll continue with Sandeep for a moment, but just to add to your comments, boys, and the fact that administration issues affect on-field performance, I think it has been quite telling of the batting problems in Nepali cricket, that there just isn't enough match situation play going on. And we talked about this last week with the T20 Women's World Cup qualifier with some of the other countries, but I think it does also ring true in Nepal, where bowling you can emulate and recreate your action multiple times, but when it comes to batting you really do need that match experience. And I think it shows with Sandeep performing so well, yet the batting not being as good. Again, we'll talk about Sandeep again at the moment. Talking about potentially going to Nepal, hopefully all three of us will be there for the ODI Tri-Series, the EPL hopefully both.
How much leave do you have?
Finalising a few of our plans. None, technically at this point. But being technically casual, I kind of have the leeway of being able to take unpaid leave. Unfortunately, it burns the pocket a little bit. But we should probably talk a little bit more at length about Sandeep's performances and news. Obviously, we have seen him in the CPL for the Barbados Tridents. We have seen him in a man of the match performance in one of their three games. They're the only Barbados catching up a little bit. They've only played three games where others have played as many as six. His figures in the three games, none for five, three for 22 and one for 35. That three for 22, he was awarded the man of the match. That was against the St. Kitts and Nevis Patriots. But the other news coming out this week is that he has re-signed with the Melbourne Stars for the 2019-2020 Big Bash. He had a really good tournament looking back to last year's numbers. No one had a better average and economy than Sandeep as a spin bowler during the tournament. And okay, people might be a little bit more aware as to working out how to play him this time around, but you feel like if he can emulate his now, you know, two season success in the Caribbean and to pick up and carry along his experience from all the other T20 tournaments, he could go just as well this year as well.
Yeah, I'm really excited that Sandeep has been re-signed for the Stars. Well, even if it is for the Stars. Interesting to see if there's any changes under the setup down there. I know that Trent Woodhill is still the list manager for the Stars. Of course, he's been in the press a lot lately about his work with Steve Smith. He and I actually went to from the same little suburb and played for the Engadine Dragons way back when. He was a few years older than me, but I remember him presenting trophies and also taking me in a couple of coaching courses. So never many degrees of separation in the cricket world, but him talking about Sandeep being signed, which is great for Melbourne. But the former head of the Sydney Thunder, who then went on to be CEO of Cricket Tasmania, being Nick Cummins, a big advocate for the expansion of the Big Bash into new markets, especially Hong Kong. He once said, you know, while he's in charge, he'd love for the team that he was in charge of, being the Thunder or the Hurricanes, as it were, to be the first teams to play in Hong Kong or an Asian leg. But he's now moved to Cricket Victoria and will oversee quite a large team of the commercial and operations for both BBL franchises. So it'll be interesting to see how Sandeep copes, if it's any different in that system. But I guess after last year, and we talked about how well Singapore had worked him out in recent qualifiers, and of course we go back to how well Callum McLeod and the Scots played Rashid Khan in the qualifiers. You see that some teams that do their research, especially on these quicker leg spinners, can occasionally get it right. We haven't seen too many since. There was that one game in the World Cup that Rashid went for 100. But I think after 1 year in the Big Bash, you're remembering there's only a couple of overseas players per team. You know, Brisbane Heat have signed two Afghan wrist spinners. I guess Mujeeb is a wrist spinner, but with Zahir Khan and also Mujeeb signing for the Heat. So I'm looking forward to watching them up here. I'm not sure if they'll take me away from the strikers yet and Rashid, but we'll see if they can reel me in. But, you know, with Sandeep's pace that he had last year, that wrong-un, that faster wrong-un off the Australian wickets, I still think is very dangerous. But, you know, the coaches will have watched a lot of tape. You know, there's been a lot of tape of him playing for Nepal and also in T20 leagues. But if he keeps taking wickets in the CPL and he can get on a bit of a roll, I think he's still such a confidence player, as so many younger players are, then really the sky's the limit, I think, for him in the Big Bash. And it's just great news for the emerging cricket world that he, from an associate nation, can take one of those, I guess you could say, coveted overseas spots in the Big Bash leagues. But, you know, it'd be great if there was an additional spot for an associate overseas. We haven't heard anything about that on the men's side for a while, about those community rookies being used for associates, nor on the women's side, unfortunately, when they had that associate rookie program. I've heard that there will be something similar with a team made up of associates that will play against some of the Big Bash franchises, but nothing official on that yet. But I still think Cricket Australia, well, Australian cricket in general, has an opportunity to really assist, especially the East Asia Pacific nations, by having an extra spot in those squads and potentially in the 11. Because, you know, with those with the number of sides in the Big Bash being 8. And of course, it's uncovered a lot of Australian talent as well. There's nothing, I don't think it would do it any harm if they allowed one extra overseas slot for an associate rookie or associate overseas. That would not count as an overseas, or that would count as an overseas for another associate. So, yeah, food for thought, and I don't think that would dilute the talent too much, and would give a chance to some of the young up-and-coming talent around the world.
Yeah, and as we discussed at the time during the Asia regional qualifiers, the way that Sandeep bounces back from being researched, and you know, as you know, there's a lot of video about him, and presumably a lot of analysis, and probably coaches developing plans. So the way he responds with his game, and you know, develops more variations, or you know, works hard to overcome technical weaknesses, that's going to be, I think, the true test. You know, so he burst onto the scene with his just raw talent, but the way that you respond to being worked out as a spin bowler is the true test of quality for mine.
Well, hopefully for Sandeep's sake, he can emulate last year's success with the Stars, and for the Stars' sake, they can go one further than losing that final in, well, one of the more monumental collapses we've seen in Big Bash cricket, losing to crosstown rivals, the Melbourne Renegades. And yes, the local Nepali fan groups across the country will go out and sport more Nepali flags, just some extra colour in the Big Bash, which was fantastic to see. Let's move on. Finally, we wanted to thank some new patrons who have jumped on board our Patreon campaign. By last count, we have 16 patrons joined the emerging cricket movement. That is a 2007 number of people. Our first goal is 104, which of course represents the number of ICC members. So a shout out to our new patrons this week: Tom Grunshaw, Clive Azevedo, Andrew Greenwood, and Ron Woods. And thank you for jumping on our Patreon bandwagon. Of course, you'll be eligible to receive exclusive content via Patreon, so look forward to that. On next week's show, we have, well, it's going to be a bumper show, just looking at the notes that we already have. We'll be joined by CricBuzz's Bertus de Jong, a fellow travel member at World Cricket League 2, and he was on some of our earlier podcasts. So if you do want a slight preview of our show next week, you can always go back and revisit them. He's a fantastic addition to the show, and always gives invaluable insight into the emerging cricket world. We'll be talking about the Challenge League, which is going on currently in Malaysia. We'll also be looking at the Ireland, Scotland, Netherlands Tri-Series, which is going on, as well as the Afghanistan, Zimbabwe, Bangladesh Tri-Series. And not to forget, of course, the USA, Namibia, Papua New Guinea Cricket World Cup League 2 Tri-Series, which is going on in Florida at the moment. Yeah, that will be a huge show, and we will likely be up at all hours of the night doing that one, but looking forward to it, as there will be plenty of content. To keep up with news from Cricket's New World, make sure to follow Emerging Cricket on your favourite social media platforms, and make sure to give us a 5-star rating wherever you are listening to the podcast. For now, from myself, Daniel Beswick, and my co-hosts Tim Cutler and Nick Skinner, enjoy the rest of your day wherever you are around the cricketing world.